Good afternoon. This is a podcast runs through it. Coming to you from Livingston, Montana, Sound Color Studios, where we're surrounded by art and music, and now we're trying to do politics. I'm here today. I'm Nelson King with Dixie Hart.
Good afternoon.
And we have an interesting interview coming up. We're going to be talking to the people from Montana Conservation Voters, MCV. And we'll be talking to Whitney and Aaron, who are here to represent what they do, trying to get people to vote and vote for conservation, which is a big issue here in Montana. As I'm talking, we're at the very beginning, I guess you could say, of the coronavirus.
Well, we really don't know if we're at the beginning because we still haven't done very much testing in this country, so.
No, and we have only one case here in Montana as I speak, and that's kind of a weird one. So
it's not actually physically in Montana.
Yeah. Well, and their home is somewhere up near Judith Gap, which is, I thought, kind of interesting.
Right.
Any case, that's our context, and it feels kind of strange talking about politics and many other things, that issues which, at the moment, seem to be secondary to what's going on with coronavirus and the
pandemic.
And the pandemic and what it will do to the economy.
Crash.
Nevertheless, life goes on.
Right. This is pretty serious.
And there are other issues, and I think today we'll be talking a lot about land issues, land use issues, and conservation, climate change. This should be a very interesting session. I'm hoping you'll stick with us. And without further discussion, let's get on to the interview.
Remember to wash your hands.
Good afternoon. This is a podcast runs through it. And today we're going to be talking with two representatives of the Montana Conservation Voters, MCV for short. And we're going to be talking to Whitney Taney, who is your...
The deputy director.
Deputy director, I thought so, yeah.
Yep.
And Aaron Murphy, who's the executive director. And we want to explore with you a little bit about not only what you do, but in the current context, you know, politically, environmentally, the elections. I suppose we won't talk about the coronavirus, but well, pretty much everything else, and give you a chance to explain what your organization is trying to do and what you personally do and your backgrounds a little bit. So we can just, why don't we start there? You know, how did you get into this and what, and weave that into the story of what Montana Conservation Voters does? And I mean, the name says quite a bit, but.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Nelson. Exciting to be here. We are big fans of the show, and by the way, really cool studio, so it's an honor to be in here. Montana Conservation Voters has been around since 1999, so last year we celebrated our 20th birthday, and the reason that I was drawn to it after working for Senator John Tester was the fact that it is a very important blend of the politics, the political landscape, and our natural landscape, and how those two merge, and that you need to elect champions who are champions of our clean water, clean air, public lands, and win those elections in order to see real progress. So at MCV, we actually are a cluster of several organizations. We have a 501c4, which is our Montana Conservation Voters. We have our Montana Conservation Voters Education Fund, which is a 501c3 organization. And then we have two political action committees, which get involved into federal and state races. So that's the MCV Action Fund and the MCV Congressional Action Fund. So all four of those work together to do what we do.
Yeah, brief explanation for those people who don't know about it. The 501c3, c4, it basically separates those that are working as a nonprofit and do not involve themselves in political activity.
Correct.
And then those that do. And
correct.
You could do both with your organization.
Exactly right. And we were very careful to separate both. So for example, our education fund is very focused on educating and civic engagement, making sure people are educated about issues and involved. And with our 501c4, that's where we hold elected decision makers accountable for their decisions at every level of government. And I think that's what we do best.
Yeah, that seems to be a a deciding characteristic. You're not only advocating for particular issues and particular conservation projects, but you also have a political agenda, so to speak. You're watching the, you know, the politicians for what they say and what they do, which is not always the same thing.
Right. And getting behind them. We endorsed several candidates already, and we expect more to be coming soon. So we have endorsed Governor Steve Bullock in his run for U.S. Senate. Just a few weeks before that, we endorsed several folks who are running for our land board. So these are the statewide office holders who all make up our land board. They make decisions about our state-owned land. So we endorsed Senator Bryce Bennett for Secretary of State, Representative Shane Morgeau for Auditor. We've endorsed Melissa Romano for Superintendent of Public Instruction. And then on the federal side, Kathleen Williams, because she has already been endorsed by MCV, as has Governor Bullock, by the way, in his previous runs for governor. So,
right. So have you made an endorsement in the Attorney General race?
Have not at this point. Both of the candidates that we consider to be advocates of conservation are very strong in that regard. You know, and when the time comes, we will invite all candidates, Republican, Democrat. Actually, we've got Libertarian candidates and Green Party candidates now. So all of them will be invited to earn our endorsement, and that might happen after the primary, though.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Our impression has been that it's a pretty deep slate this year. Quite a lot of very talented people running for office. We usually have good people, but I don't know. What's your impression?
I think that we are seeing a lot of people that want change, and they are ready to finally put their money where their mouth is, I guess, in some ways, which is really exciting. But I also think that we still have a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. And one thing that we're really excited about, though, in a lot of these races this year is there are so many more young people. And they're not just, it's great to have young people, but they're exceptionally qualified. So that's kind of exciting. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, it really is. And one of the things we did just a few months ago, for example, in Billings, where I live, we got behind several candidates running for the city council race. And those are nonpartisan positions, but there were several people, mostly women, who were running and are very strong candidates. They were very strong candidates. Several of them are now members of our city council, and we see a lot of leadership potential in those candidates. So when we get behind somebody at a level like a city council race, well, 5 or 6, 7, maybe 10 years, maybe sooner, maybe that person will be running for governor or U.S. senator at some
point.
So we're paying attention
great
to
place
the future.
To start. Yeah.
So we've been talking about your political agenda, but behind that, of course, are the issues. And not all specifically conservation, although that's a big, you can use that word freely, I suppose. Talk a little bit about how your organization addresses issues. You know, how do you decide what issues to deal with? And because it obviously changes from year to year, and it's part of its legislative, but
I think that Montana is very unique in the sense that we have over 70% of us that are identifying as conservationists, which means people deeply care about these issues. And for us, there are certain things that rise to the top that are pressing and urgent and need to be addressed now. One of those things is climate change. Of course, that is something that we're staring down the barrel of right now, but then also our public lands, because that's kind of the fabric of what makes us Montanans and the fact that we do have so many public lands here in the state, and they're under threat. And then the other piece, of course, is clean water and clean air, because we all want to have a healthy community to live in, and we don't want to look like some of the other states, even in the West, that we're starting to see affected.
All right.
One of the things that I think is very cool, this is before I even arrived at MCV, but Whitney and our political director, a guy named Jake, spent the entire session inside the Montana Capitol. And I think it's worth touting if, Whitney, you could talk about the way that you worked with lawmakers at the state to basically push forward an important conservation agenda.
Yeah, so it was a big experience for me in the sense that I'd been lobbying federally for a long time, and coming home to the state house, it is definitely full of citizen legislature, and lots of things are happening because we only have 90 days every other year. So the education opportunity isn't necessarily the same, but what we're really proud of is that Montana Conservation Voters runs the Conservation Working Group, which is a coalition of 12-plus organizations that works the entire session, and every single Monday we decide what issues are popping. We're watching all the bills. We're working with the legislators to make sure that their bills, if they're good for conservation, are on that list. But basically, we call it our hot list, and we pass those out at the beginning of the day so that when they hit the floor, they know how to vote. And I think that especially because it is so fast and kind of chaotic, without that, we would be in a lot of trouble just because no one has time to read all that stuff right. And everything else. So we were really successful. And given that we didn't have necessarily the most friendly legislature this last time around, we're also able to count on Governor Steve Bullock to be our backstop for anything that did pass through that we were uncomfortable with. So it was good.
Let's talk a little bit about that. Take an issue. Mm-hmm. And then talk about what problems you typically run into. I mean, I think people are aware that most Montanans are very much conservation-oriented. Mm-hmm. But what they say and how they go about showing that can be very different. And, of course, they have this split between the development of resources and the preservation of resources. And how do you find that? When you work with an issue inside the legislature, mm-hmm. what happens?
Well, I think that it's really about building relationships and making sure that you have the ability to talk to everyone. And I think there are a lot of folks that are in that building that all have different opinions on how we conserve for future generations, et cetera. But I think being able to talk about the facts and have kind of the background information that people are looking for instead of just that surface level is really important.
And Nelson, I would add at the federal level, that's something we also pay very close attention to. So we, for example, have been holding Senator Steve Daines accountable for his record of, on paper and in words, saying he supports full funding for our public lands. But at the end of the day, and remember, he is a very powerful member of the Senate who serves on the Appropriations Committee, which ultimately controls what we spend on those public lands. He is very good at telling Montanans, look, I support them, and getting a lot of credit for that, but then at the end of the day, not necessarily flexing his muscle to get those public lands funded. So that's where we come in, and we hold him accountable to that. And so we go to great lengths to make sure, fairly, by the way, and we don't do it because of his political party or anything like that. It's specifically related to an issue. Now, because he is a member of the party that controls the Senate's agenda, we do figure that he's got extra clout, which is true. That's the way it works in the Senate. So we expect him to do whatever he can to, for example, fully fund the Land and Water Conservation Fund. If he says he wants to do that, we expect him to pull some strings to get it to happen because he sits in the position of power to do so.
Let's start with the Land and Water Conservation Fund. What is it?
It is a federal initiative that has been around for about 55 years, and it is a very important program. What it does is it collects offshore oil and gas development revenue, so say the Gulf of Mexico, and funnels that money into the interior, so funding public lands. And when I say public lands, it's not just federal public lands, which that's a big part of it. It funds conservation easements, it funds acquisitions for lands, but it also funds things like swimming pools and parks and bike trails, things that people use when they want to be outside. And it's a very important fund because it doesn't use taxpayer dollars directly. It uses these offshore oil and gas revenues, and it is supposed to be funded every single year with $900 million. Well, ever since this baby was born, it hasn't received that level of funding except for 1 year. And so we have come in early and said, we expect full funding of this. It is important. It is what Congress has mandated. And I think Congress has been pretty loose with the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which we often shorthand to LWCF, in shortchanging it. And just this last year, for example, after Senator Dayne said he supports full funding, he came in and asked for $600 million.
Right.
And we said, wait a second, 600 isn't 900. Why did you do that? And if you start not at the full level, you're probably going to end up with half. Well, lo and behold, when the final budget came out, the spending came out, it was for $495 million. So it's a little more than half. Not what we expect. We expect more, especially since he said it. Now, he's made some news recently for getting behind legislation to fully fund it. That's great. Senator John Tester is behind that legislation, too. We fully support that. I would note from a political perspective that this very same day that he announced that legislation was also the same day we got word that he was getting a challenger in his U.S. Senate race. And what we do at MCV is we look at conservation champions who are conservation champions. They do things because things are right, not because it's politically expedient for them.
Right.
We think that you don't need to have a very expensive Tier A Senate race in order to do the right thing. So while we're happy about that, we also want to draw attention to the fact that it looks very political. And in the future, we can't afford stuff like that.
Right.
So you want to set a pattern, actually.
Absolutely. We want $900 million every single year because that's what our public lands deserve.
And that's what the legislation says, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Right.
And we want to make sure they know that they're being held accountable.
Exactly.
It's also about our economy, right? Because Montana is supporting $7 billion in spending here in our state for outdoor recreation. Yeah. We need that money to be able to protect these places so people actually want to come here, and Montana continues to be the crown of the United States as far as our public lands.
Right. Well, and what about the... I just read recently that Trump's 2021 budget proposes cutting 97%.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because that is another thing that part of our efforts to educate people that they understand that part of the process of a bill becoming a law is the president of the United States gets to set a budget. That is his priorities for the next year. Here's what we should spend. Well, lo and behold, the LWCF got the short end of the stick. $14.7 million is all the President of the United States proposed for the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Again, Dixie, it was a cut of 97%. And just a few weeks ago, that budget proposal came under scrutiny in a U.S. Senate hearing. We looked at the hearing and we noticed that Senator Daines was not part of that hearing. And then we got word that he was actually attending, and I've got the invitation right in front of me. He was attending a political fundraiser instead. And that's the sort of thing that we get wind of, and we want to call attention to it, because at the end of the day, we expect our elected leaders to do the work of the people, because we are the bosses, right? We pay their salaries. We expect them to do that, especially if they're going to make political hay with this stuff. To be part of those discussions and not attending fundraisers instead.
Right.
So basically what happens is there's an effort to cut that money.
Yep.
Where does it go? It
goes back to the Treasury. It can be spent on all sorts of different things.
Right. And at a time where they want to increase offshore drilling, thereby increasing revenues going into the fund, they want to take the money out of what it was originally intentioned for.
Yep. And I would add, it still is a pretty darn good deal because this was a 1965 $900 million.
Yeah.
That is not the same as a dollar's rate this like today.
Right.
So as is usually the case in Congress, the president proposes a budget. It's usually awful. They amend it, usually upward, not always, but very often upward. That's common. But if you have a very low base, the compromise, so to speak, is still not anywhere near where you want it to be. So you're trying to set the pattern.
Right, exactly. And again, this bill that is working its way through Congress now is a very good bill because it would dedicate and fund $900 million per year. Again, we celebrate that. We think that's a very good step.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not a miracle move. It's not a heavy lift. It is simply doing what Congress expects you to do. So we say thank you, but we also say, all right, now let's keep going.
Right. But why is it stalling, though?
Good question. That is a probably better question for the folks who control the Senate's agenda, and there's all sorts of things at stake right now. And the good news is there are enough people, lawmakers, who are co-sponsoring this bill, bipartisan, which is fantastic, to probably just muscle this thing through and get it passed and signed into law ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
Your biggest muscle, then, is the fact that they all know people want this.
Right. I think it says a lot that Senator Steve Daines and U.S. Senator from Colorado, Senator Cory Gardner, both of whom are up for re-election this year, got behind this bill. And the president tweeted a few weeks ago that he supported this bill, even after recommending decimating it in his budget proposal. Nonetheless, we think all of this is happening because we're doing okay holding them accountable to it. When we, you know, spell this out for people in Montana who have the power to vote, people know that public lands, for example, transcends partisan politics, as it should.
Right.
Senator Daines likes to say he supports public lands. Great. That's great for a candidate to tell constituents. Our job is to make sure it's not just rhetoric, that mm-hmm. the record matches it. That's where we come in.
Yeah.
Right.
The fig leaf approach.
Right. And it's also, I mean, I think these politicians should start ending that sentence, you know, finishing that, make it more complete. Like, I support public lands for outdoor recreation,
right.
or I support public lands because there's all kinds of resources there that we should develop.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
and so right now I think that vagary, especially from the GOP, leaves people uninformed about what their real intentions are.
Well, and you know, you don't have to look far back to see that Senator Daines, just a few years ago, and Congressman Gianforte, the bills were slightly different, but they introduced legislation to take the ambiguity out of what are called wilderness study areas and basically release them from their status as de facto wilderness areas. Interesting concept, but we were scratching our heads because those bills were introduced without public input, and the public made themselves heard loud and clear. And when Senator Daines would listen, which wasn't very often because he doesn't like to hear from constituents in person, but it's notable that both of them tried to do that, which, by the way, would open those lands up for development. They haven't been reintroduced. And so I think that says a lot about where things stand.
Yeah.
I would say another particular tie for this too is William Perry Penley heading up BLM and Senator Daines continuing to say that he has not been given a reason to be against him. Well, this man has been opposed to public lands for a very long time. We have the record on that. That is something that he made his money off of as a lawyer, et cetera. And the fact is he also, on a different podcast in Montana, but did say, my job is to think about developing all the land. Well, guess what? He is starting to do that, and we've already seen 650 acres disappear, basically, before our eyes, because there was a deal around Lewistown that opened up another 650,000 acres for oil and gas.
Mm.
Right. And it's important to note that William Perry Penley is not the director of the BLM. He's the acting director.
And
he hasn't been confirmed by the Senate, which I think is part of the strategy of this administration, right? To basically pop people in. They're not necessarily accountable to elected leaders who are supposed to confirm these positions. And he gets very defensive when you say, well, you've got a pretty awful record when it comes to public lands. The record speaks for itself. I mean, we didn't make these words up. He said them. And so when Senator Daines says something to the effect of, well, I haven't found a reason to be against him, well, we've got lots of them. All you have to do is look at the facts.
It doesn't take long.
Yeah.
And he just got extended another 3 months as of January.
Right.
Which prompted us to organize a letter, make sure the Montanans knew that, and we're still waiting for a response from Senator Daines and Congressman Gianforte.
Yeah, I hope people understand what you're talking about, because this is an issue a lot of people care about. Preserving our lands. The BLM is in charge of a Bureau of Land Management, right? It's a very important piece of that puzzle. And you're talking about, as they like to do, put somebody in that position whose job is to destroy the agency.
Right.
250 million acres are managed by William Perry Penley. Mm-hmm. That should scare everyone.
That's terrifying. Yeah.
And what you're also talking about is actually complacency and or actually conspiracy to go along with that. they know who he is.
Oh, right. Exactly right. Know. Yep, exactly right. And the problem that we see, and this is just an observation as an American citizen, but there's so much other news that happens every day, you know, from the president's right. Twitter feed, that it's little things like this, which are not little things. They're very big things, but they tend to get swept under the rug, and we move on, and, you know, we haven't even caught our breath from yesterday's news, and
exactly.
we're making new news, and here the BLM
yeah.
is very
and meanwhile,
quietly.
Yeah, right. In the yeah. background, there's all these things that are happening,
right.
and they all build on themselves.
That's
so
right. That's right.
It's,
they
it's,
count on that.
It's a real threat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's talk about Steve Bullock entering the Senate race.
Yeah.
And how's that going to affect your agenda?
Well, I should start by saying, again, he is endorsed by MCV, so just a full disclosure there. Again, we invited all Senate candidates, regardless of political party, to seek our endorsement, and he earned it. Also worth noting that he was endorsed by MCV in his previous runs for governor and has been a champion for conservation. And as Whitney noted a little earlier, has been the backstop to some pretty awful pieces of legislation that have come out of the legislature. And to that end, we are very proud to stand behind him, again, not as a Democrat, but as a conservation advocate. That's why we endorsed him. And I think he is a very popular governor. I would note that when tens of thousands of Montanans voted for Donald Trump in 2016, they also voted for Steve Bullock. And that speaks volumes to the electorate in this state, that they are willing to look at people over a political party. And when you match that with his conservation record, it's something that we're very excited about. And again, I think it's also good for everybody, because what it's doing is holding Senator Daines, chief opponent, who's the incumbent, accountable to his own record. So now Senator Daines can't just get away with saying, oh, I support public lands. Well, now you have to prove it, because
right.
Governor Bullock already has. And we want to make sure that conservation, particularly public lands, becomes a front and center issue, because there is a huge difference of records between those two candidates. So it's our job to make sure that people go to the ballot box with that information in mind, and that they know who is good at rhetoric and who is good at record.
Right.
How do you intend to deliver that message? Advertising or?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one strategy. And we plan to do that. We plan to have boots on the ground. People go door to door and make sure people are aware of the candidates and the facts that we are behind. We plan to do it through voter education, through email, through social media. And I think to that end, you know, we are currently raising the money necessary to do that sort of thing. And there is a lot of interest all of a sudden in this race, because with no disrespect to the other candidates who have bravely put their name forward, Steve Bullock has name recognition. People know who he is. He's popular among Democrats and Republicans and independents. And that's what this state is made up of, mostly independents. So we're excited about the prospect of adding another conservation champion who is really a champion to the Senate. But again, I want to separate that from the political party he belongs to, because we're a nonpartisan organization.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's a difficulty for you to convince people that you are not actually
right.
nonpartisan.
Right.
You know, if you had a conservative who was really interested in conservation, that would be great.
Right. I think the perfect example of that is Ryan Zinke, our former congressman and the former Secretary of Interior.
Yep.
When he was in the state legislature, we did endorse him. He had one of the best records for conservation. And then all of a sudden, as soon as he left the state, he forgot what that meant. And so we did flip the switch on him, and we did some very strong accountability. But I think that that is recent history. That shows that we are nonpartisan. That shows that it is about conservation, and it's about what actions you're taking versus just lip service.
Right. I would add to that, we invite everybody who is running for public office to come into our tent, which is, we're not just talking about lofty principles here. We're talking about saving the earth.
Right.
We're talking about future generations. That is not a partisan issue for us.
Right.
But we are also not going to pretend that, you know, we're going to endorse a candidate just because that candidate belongs to a certain party, so we appear bipartisan. No, they're welcome to come to us and say, look, this is important to me regardless of the party I belong to. I want your endorsement. We will absolutely have that conversation, and we welcome it, and we wish there was more of it. Unfortunately, it seems that most of the candidates we endorse belong to one party only, and I think that's a sad state of affairs, but it's not something that we're going to lower our standard for.
It wasn't right. always true either.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. 30 years ago, there were a lot more
conservatives
who were into conservation.
Right. And I think most people in this state who consider themselves independents and might consider themselves leaning more to the right, those are people who share the same values we do. They care about clean water for their kids. They care about the places their dad took them hunting 30, 40 years ago. That's what we care about. And then oftentimes we are labeled as, a quote unquote dark money organization or a partisan organization. That is false. We are not a partisan organization. We simply care about electing people who are true to their word.
Right, right. Or radical environmentalists. Right. I like that one. Although I think one could hardly say that Montana Conservation Voters is a radical organization, since I'm sure you have to compromise a lot on a lot of the issues that you're working
on. I'm glad you brought that up, Dixie, because one of the things that's very important to us is, in order to affect change, you have to win those elections. And so we look at viability, the ability for a candidate to win, because without being able to win and be in that position of power, it is very hard to move the needle. So sometimes that means where we end up is a little more in the middle. And that's important. So we are not, I don't consider us radical at all. In fact, there are plenty of organizations out there who think we're too far to the right for them. They're welcome to believe that, but at the end of the day, for us, it comes down to who we think is the best person to represent us on the issue of conservation.
Let me take a difficult issue. Okay, right now we've been talking about land use, which I think you get a huge amount of agreement about in the United States, and particularly in Montana. But climate change, climate emergency, is a more controversial issue, even here in Montana. And politically, it's a more difficult issue. I'm sure it is. How do you handle that? What is your stance on climate, and how do you handle that?
Right. And we're starting to use the term climate breakdown because it really we're past the point of acknowledging this as change. This is a fundamental change that. That, by the way, young people are really paying attention to, I should note. I was sitting at a table with a bunch of young women a few months ago, very engaged. We were at an event, and I just out of curiosity asked them who they were supporting for president. And this was months ago, so the field was bigger then, but they all said Jay Inslee. I said, that's interesting. Well, Governor Inslee of Washington State, his sole issue when he was a presidential candidate was climate change. And that was very telling to me. I mean, these were probably 18 to 19-year-old women, and all of them wanted to support, Jay Inslee of Washington. That tells me a lot. But what I would say is, to answer your question, we want to make sure that people understand this is an economic issue. And Whitney mentioned that earlier and can touch on it further. But in 2016, not all that long ago, the river running right outside here was shut down to fishing because a whole bunch of fish went belly up from proliferative kidney disease, and it caused them to die, and the governor shut down the river. A huge bite to the economy. That wasn't just because of some random accident. That was caused by climate change.
Yeah.
A year later, we saw the most devastating wildfires in Montana's history. It was so bad, the streetlights came on because the air was so thick with smoke. That's not an accident. That is climate breakdown happening. And it affected our economy. There were plenty of people who canceled their summer vacations to Yellowstone and to Glacier because you couldn't see across the street. That's something that everybody should be paying attention to. It's not us making up facts. It's us living in the same world as you do.
I'd also add that we've been very supportive of Governor Bullock's Climate Solutions Council. We've actually got a couple of our board members that are participating on that. Although I think some people would say it's late to the game because he is rolling down his term, at the same time, I think it's really hopeful because it's bringing people together from divergent, different views and coming up with ideas that hopefully, with a the right governor taking that place, we will really be able to make some difference with.
Can you expand a little bit on that? What is it and what is it trying to do? Who's on it? What?
Yeah, so it's got people varying from the oil and gas industry all the way to people that are farmers and ranchers, professors of climate science or environmentalists. And basically the idea is to come up with some real solutions as to what takes Montana further. Some of it even is as small as making sure we have electric charging stations for electric vehicles, because we have only 900 electric vehicles or something. I think it was 948 were registered in Montana. And that's going to change here pretty fast. And what do we do about it? How do we make sure that we are there to meet the demand as the world changes?
So again, it's called?
The Montana Climate Solutions Council.
Okay, and as a council, it exists as what? Part of the government? A separate entity?
They're separate. I mean, it is an appointment from the governor. He also came out with basically a big statement about climate change. It was the first time in his preamble that he ever had said that Montana is desiring a carbon-free future. That's the first time in history that's ever happened in Montana. Which to us was really exciting and encouraging,
right?
Because that also means this is something that people are really needing to talk about and are starting to talk about instead of just giving it lip service.
Right, right.
Does it have any teeth?
Does it have any teeth? I think that it's too soon to tell.
It could have teeth if people realize how urgent this issue is and vote the right people into positions of power to make it have teeth. But
right.
Unfortunately, I don't think we're quite there yet. We're working on it, though.
Well, the usual thing is they say, oh, a panel like that, oh, if they're good, they have moral suasion.
Right.
Why?
Well, I think it's just this is the first time that they met was, they've only had one or two sessions so far?
Yeah, they've only had a couple. And I think that there's several smaller committees within it. I think that people have really big and great ideas, but it's also about finding kind of that middle ground that we talked about earlier,
right?
Of it does take these different views to come up with the best solution.
Well, yeah, and the thing I respect about about that is it really does look like they tried to get people from all different backgrounds and interests. But, you know, so the scope of it is great, but at the same time, I can see where that could really slow progress down because they have such extreme interests that are involved on that board. So I'm happy to hear that they're breaking down into smaller groups, so maybe they will be able to get something done.
Right, and hopefully at some point put together proposals that can be enacted as legislation,
right,
or as executive orders. The idea there is to make sure that Governor Bullock has input from a wide variety of people in order to move the needle.
So
right.
Bullock started it or put it
right,
together?
With the executive order.
Right.
Yep.
So its continuation depends on the governor?
I think its continuation depends on who is sitting in that capital.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the next governor could say,
right,
all gone.
And we sure hope that won't happen.
Right. Right.
And it might.
Yes. So there's a sense of urgency
yes,
to get the
is.
Right governor
yes,
in there.
Yes, there is. Yep.
I noticed that is, this subject was number 9 on that great video that
you
guys
you.
Put together. And we will have a link to that video. But tell us about how that came about and maybe, you know, run down what your top 10 were for last year.
Let me just fill in. They put together, every organization, nonprofit or otherwise, puts together, what did we do last year? You know, and it's usually very dry. And,
right, but I thought you had an interesting story.
And they have
about
put together
a
video,
that.
Which they did themselves, and it covers all what they consider their top 10, and that format, if you're familiar with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was fun, and we had an event February 28th in Helena. We do it every year, but boy, we had 200 people at the Holter Museum. We had a great time. It was a fundraiser for us, but also an opportunity to showcase what we do. We don't just ask for your money and then sit on it. We try to do the best we can with it to move our mission forward. And to that end, we had a pretty wild year, full of stuff, everything ranging from accountability to working with Governor Bullock on that executive order to revamping our internal policies. I guess I would focus on the thing that we are very excited about because it's happening very soon. We are launching something called the Montana Engagement Project, which is a collaborative effort with Western Native Voice. And we will be going to northeastern Montana with a canvas. So people who go around door to door, knock on doors, introduce themselves, have conversations at the door to get input, to take input, and basically make sure that they leave behind information about what the impacts of the Keystone XL pipeline are, because we plan to be in communities along the route of the pipeline. And also in the Fort Peck Reservation. And so we'll have canvassers all over the place making sure that the communities are aware what's happening and that we are hearing and from them. And the cool part about this is we will be embedding a professional podcast producer to join them and to tell the story of the pending construction of KXL, because it's still a thing. I think people have forgotten about it, but it is very much an issue that is still pending. And we want to make sure, wearing our hats as educators, that people are aware of exactly what's happening in this state, even though far away from here.
Right, right. So exactly what is that process going to involve? I mean, you're talking about public education. Yep. And
it'll involve a team of canvassers, people who go to a community and they knock on doors. And we're talking communities like Glasgow, Baker, Circle, Wolf Point, Poplar. Again, these are the communities right along the route there. And talking about all the aspects. You know, for example, sheriff's offices in that part of the country are looking at what happened with the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota, and they're saying to themselves, whoa, if we have a situation like that here, are we ready for it? We want to make sure that if the pipeline comes through, they're aware of the economic impacts of it, but also some of the other things that I don't think people necessarily think about, the quote unquote man camps that come with it. And you know, there are issues that come with man camps, people, temporary workers coming in and getting a job done. Well, that doesn't necessarily always have a positive impact on that community.
We've seen
it before. Right?
Well, and we know people in Eastern Montana are already seeing the negative effects they have for a long time of fracking, the Bakken development.
Right, right.
So they know what those kind of things are. But so I guess what I'm wondering is, so you're going to bring attention to what some of the negative effects of the pipeline, the potential spills, things like that.
Exactly. And there are all sorts of things that we want to make sure everybody is aware of. So, for example, right now the plan is for the pipeline to go under the river right outside the boundary of the Fort Peck Reservation. Well, that crossing right now is on a fault line. So one little jolt of the earth could rupture a pipeline that will affect the water table, that affects everybody in that neck of the woods. Does everybody know that? I don't think they do. So our goal is to make sure that we tell the fair and accurate story about exactly what's going to happen if and when this project moves forward, because right now it's not stopping. So it's our job to make sure that people have the information necessary to form their own opinions on it, but also be very truthful about it so that we can move forward making good decisions about things like this in the future with good information, and also being respectful of the communities that are there. You know, if people support the pipeline, we want to hear it. Why? Tell us why. We want to understand it better. You know, communities in tribal communities, tribal governments, which are sovereign nations of their own, might have a completely different perspective. We want to tell that story too. And a lot of times they haven't been consulted with.
You're working with one of the tribes, or at least a tribal organization.
Yes, we are. With is a good word, because that is very much what we intend to do. But the Fort Peck tribes, headquartered in Poplar, we want to make sure that we are communicating with them and in touch with them. And in fact, we'll be meeting with them this month.
So it goes across as tribal lands?
The pipeline itself
in Montana
does not, but right outside. So it is very fair to say that the pipeline itself would impact Indian country in a very big way, even though the land itself, the Indian land there isn't, the pipeline won't cross over.
The other part of it too is that we're going to summarize this and deliver it to all of our elected officials, which I think is really important because that listening hasn't necessarily happened in a bigger way.
Right. So it's a big, lofty project. It's something that we are excited about. It's ready to go. We are actually hiring up for it. If anybody's interested in being one of these canvassers, you're welcome to apply for the job. At the end of the day, it's also a model that we would like to replicate all over the state. So if this is a success, that we can tell this story in northeastern Montana, well, where else can we take the Montana Engagement Project to do the same thing, to tell a story about what is happening with the conservation movement, with our public lands, with our clean water, and do the same thing everywhere with in collaboration with a bunch of other organizations, whoever wants to join us, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Whatever mix you can put together.
Right, right.
Yep. So any other elements that you want to highlight from your list of 10? Or?
Oh, gosh, I think we covered quite a bit of it. I just, I guess the last thing I would note is since we're here in Livingston seems to be a very fascinating community because it pretty good representation of where the eastern part of the state meets the western part of the state, plus you've got the Yellowstone River and the park just south of here. There's a reason that we've decided to hold our birthday gala here again this year. So October 1st, which is a Thursday because we know better than to disrupt weekends and hunting season. October 1st of this year, we'll be celebrating again at the Livingston Depot.
Yeah, the last one was the 20th, right?
It was October 10th of last year, and it was a...
I mean, your 20th anniversary.
Oh, yeah, it was 20th birthday, correct. Yeah, it was 20th birthday, so this is our 21st year. So, good reason to celebrate a 21st birthday, and more details will come out. But if anybody's interested, we'd love to have you there, and it's a lot of fun, and another fundraiser for us because... if I could make a pitch, the work we do isn't for free. I mean, we are constantly looking for funding in order to do it. We are a nonprofit organization, but we are also growing, which is very exciting. And I think we've got a lot of work to do. And I think if we can show people the work that we do and that it is a good investment in a good cause, an important cause, we would respectfully seek that funding and be very grateful for it because the earth is worth fighting for.
Absolutely.
And I, just because we were also in Livingston, at our last big birthday gala, we did celebrate two of our legislative champions, and one happened to be Lori Bishop.
Yay.
Who is here in Livingston and been an ardent champion for conservation issues, particularly renewable energy. But you guys should be proud of all the work that she's doing. She does it with grace and kindness. It was really great for us to be able to honor her this last year.
Yeah, we're super proud of her. And she received your Blue Marble Award?
Yeah, Blue Marble mm-hmm. Award. Yeah, our inaugural Blue Marble Award, which is kind of a neat way to say thank you. It's a little pin. Resembles the
kind of
famous
globe.
Resembles the picture taken by the Apollo spacecraft, and but a small thing to that she can wear, and
that's beautiful.
And we'll be doing it again this year, so
that's excellent. And I noticed she also got a one of your lifetime champions on your legislative scorecard. Yay, Lori Bishop.
Yeah, exactly. She is paving the way. I also would say, like, as a woman, it was really exciting to have her be such a strong champion and leader up at the state legislature, because there's not a lot of us that are there. So we really appreciate that, kinship as well.
Yeah, we won't go into it, but the legislative scorecard is part of your project.
Correct. Yep.
Right.
Which is what it sounds like. You keep track of who votes on what bill and who is pro-conservation, who is not, and people can go online, right?
Yep, mtvoters.org/scorecard. It's all there. We encourage folks to look at it because I mean, everybody's represented by somebody in the legislature, senator and a representative, and there are 9 votes that we scored, and we let them know in advance that, hey, we're going to score you before you vote on this. And some lawmakers, I'm sorry to say, could care less. They don't care. Right. In fact, they are proud of the fact that they have a 0% score with us. That's insane. We live in a state with public lands. You should never be doing that.
Yeah.
And if you do, that's your right, but your constituents ought to be aware of it. And so that's where
exactly.
We come in.
So before you cast your vote, you can always see where that candidate stands right. on their legislative. Right.
And these are all common sense things, by the way. These aren't, you know, wacky issues that we just woke up and decided to push someday. These are very basic common sense issues that, again, apply to all Montanans.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that it brings us back around to your organization as a whole. Montana, conservation. Mm-hmm. Voters.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm glad you mentioned that, Nelson, because the voters is our last name. And so to that end, it's not just conservation that we care about. We also very much care about the ability and the right for people to cast their votes and do it with education that we provide. And so if we get wind of any effort to suppress voting in this state, which happens far too often, if we get word that there are efforts underway to make voting more difficult for people, we come in there too, because again, we believe that in order to affect change, you need to have the right people making decisions on your behalf. And if you can't vote for those people in a way that is easy as your right should be, then we have a problem, and we will take right. action to fix it the best we can.
Right. So voting first.
Yes.
So vote.
Very important. I wish everybody who could did, and they don't, and that's sad. But we'll try to change it,
and we are too. That's one of our focuses,
particularly
here.
With this issue or this cluster of issues around conservation. It's again, we stress most people in Montana support that.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And again, right. these are issues that transcend partisan politics, or they should. And
they
if
should.
They don't, then that is that's a darn shame, but we believe they do, and at the end of the day, we can come together and celebrate the fact that we realize that we live in the last best place. It is worth protecting. There's a reason people wait their entire lifetimes to come see the national park that's just 50 miles down the road. Right. And we get to live here. And when things happen like tens of thousands of whitefish dying in the river because of climate change, we want our officials to pay attention to things like that. We want them to address the problem and not dismiss it as some wacky left-wing conspiracy. That's not what we're doing. We're in the business of fighting for what's real.
Right.
And there's nothing more real than breathing clean air and drinking clean water and enjoying a picnic in a piece of land that you own. Very basic.
And on that note,
thank
you, Whitney, very much for coming here. And Aaron, I'm hope that you will. I hope this is a good year for you. It's going to be a tough year. I can tell that all up and down the line for every issue, but a lot of complications.
Yeah. It's a critical one. So everybody's got to vote.
I will tell you, we have a team. It's a very small team. We're scrappy, but we are. We're used to challenges. We're ready for the fight. It is going to be a fight. It is something that we are not afraid to do. We have no problem holding powerful people accountable, no matter what it means for us. We get called all sorts of names. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we're doing right by our kids. And at the end of the day, I sleep well at night knowing that.
Excellent.
Good. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
you
very much.
This was the first interview we've done with an organization. We want to do this because there are in Montana a lot of very interesting organizations, particularly to do with, not so much with politics, but with issues involving Montana and the land and climate change and that sort of thing.
Right, and an organization that engages voters, you know, which is a very important thing. If you have policies or issues that you're promoting, if you can't get people to vote for the candidates that are going to represent those policies, then, you know,
yeah, well,
it's sort of like step one.
I hearken back to what they said, and this is my own experience too, that 30, 40 years ago, everybody on all political sides were in favor of conservation and in favor of preserving the environment.
Right.
And it's saddening to be at this point where we have to apologize for not having Republicans on the show to say things like that because they don't hold these positions anymore. But that's the truth of it, and that's something that Montana conservation voters have to deal with all the time. But their main point is conservation and voting and getting people out to support the candidates who support conservation. Pretty simple formula.
Yep, and in a state like Montana, it's very important. So we're grateful for the work they do. And it sounds like they're getting more and more organized, so we'll be hearing a lot from them in the...
Yeah, I hope so. It's going to be a very interesting, particularly Senate race this year, so... Those things have changed. Anyway, for myself, Nelson King, and Dixie Hart, I'd say goodbye and good evening, and thank you very much for listening. This has been a podcast Runs Through It, coming to you from downtown Livingston in Sound Color Studios.